Hello, everybody.
Hello.
It's Funk Radio once again. Hello.
Yay.
Hi.
This is your host, Kyle, who just got up from a nap.
And this is your host, Peter, who took a nap yesterday. So in a different way, I also woke up from a nap.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to Funk Radio, everybody. I assume you're all shouting and cheering right now, but we can't hear you. So we'll just make that assumption.
Funk Radio is about as important as those old 40s fireside chats that FDR used to have, where he would go on the radio and speak to his constituents. That's basically what we're doing right now. So vote for Funk in 2018.
So we have at least what I consider to be a pretty interesting topic this week. And I don't know why, but as I'm talking right now, it feels like my voice is disappearing, which is not good considering I'm going to be talking for like an hour.
Uh-oh.
So I don't remember the exact context, Kyle, but within the last couple of episodes, we basically came to a point where we said, hey, it would be interesting to do a topic on basically voice synthesizers in music.
Yeah.
Because we don't really know anything about them. I mean, we know that they exist, obviously, and what they sound like, but as far as like the different kinds or how long they've been around, I knew absolutely nothing until doing research for this.
And I still don't know anything.
And you still don't know anything. And neither do you, listeners. But hopefully after this episode, you'll have learned a couple of things.
There will be a quiz at the end.
This is one of those topics where, as long as this episode is probably going to be and how much I'm going to be talking, this is still probably only a fraction of the things that you could talk about in this topic. My goal with this was to really pinpoint the major forms of voice synthesis and talk about those different kinds on a very high level. But even so, I think we'll still learn a few things. So
cool.
That's fun. So let's see. In my research, I kind of was able to narrow down voice synthesizers into kind of three categories, which you, Kyle, or the listeners may have heard some or all of these already in the past. The first one is the TalkBox. The second one is the vocoder. And the third one is AutoTune. And while they produce similar effects, they're not all entirely the same thing. And obviously we'll be going about talking about the differences between those. I'm trying to think if there's anything really we really want to talk about before we really get into this. I don't know. Do you have any initial questions going into this?
I'm sure you'll probably get more in depth into it. I assume that some of these are physical
like
voice modulators, whereas others are more software based.
Yes, that is true.
Okay.
And I guess cool. We'll get into the shits with this. So I mentioned those three different types. I'm going to go through them basically chronologically in terms of like which ones appeared first. So the first one we're going to talk about is the TalkBox. So in the very basic sense, how it works is you connect the output of an instrument, which is in this case is usually a guitar or a synthesizer. TalkBoxes specifically have mostly been associated with guitars. So basically you plug in the output from a guitar into this little box that has a small little speaker in it. The speaker in that box has an airtight connection with this plastic tube that feeds all the way up your mic stand to your mouth, and you put it either near or usually in your mouth. And while you're playing the instrument, like the guitar, the sound is going into that box up through the tube into your mouth. And then what you're doing is you are basically mouthing words or sounds or whatever it is you're wanting to do. Like, let's say you're singing the lyrics to the song, but when this tube is in your mouth, the sound from that guitar is basically what's coming out of your mouth, not your actual voice, because you're not actually saying anything. You're just mouthing the words. But by modulating the shape of your mouth to form the shapes of these different words, that sound is still coming through from the guitar, and then it comes out into your microphone as basically, it's the instrument, it's the sound of the instrument, but it's warped in such a way that it sounds like your voice is singing through that instrument, or that the instrument itself is singing. if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I've seen this used before in like concert footage. I didn't really understand what it was. I thought it was like some sort of rudimentary auto-tune, but I didn't realize that's how it worked. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it took me a little bit of time, and the way I just described it is basically the most fundamental way I think you could explain it. It took me a little bit of time to understand that you're not actually saying or singing words. You're basically just making the mouth shapes, and that audio is coming through and then leaving your mouth again as if you were singing it, essentially.
Yeah, it's almost like your mouth is the modulator for this external sound. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. And even with this, I don't entirely know how that actually works, but it works. So that's pretty cool. So the thing that interested me about this is that the first appearance of this was way back in 1939.
Jesus.
Which is quite a lot earlier than I was expecting. So it actually, basically, it appeared in kind of two different forms in 1939. The first was with jazz musician Alvino Ray. He invented a technique which he basically called a quote-unquote singing guitar. And what I just described about how the talk box works, that's essentially what his method was. And so like I said, he was a jazz musician, so he would use this technique on stage as he was performing. And then he also notably used it in the 1944 film Jam Session. This is only about 5 years after he invented it as well. However, even though he used it on stage and in this movie, it was kind of considered a novelty attraction. And so nobody really developed it further, for at least for the time being, of course, because obviously, you know, later it became more of a thing. Around that same time, there was kind of a variation on this called the Sonovox, which was invented by Gilbert Wright, again, also 1939. So instead of the tube, as I was describing, that comes from that box up into your mouth, basically you put these, I don't want to call them speakers necessarily, but basically you put these things on your throat and you talk, and the synthesis basically comes from reading the vibrations in your throat as you're actually talking versus using your mouth shapes in your mouth. I don't know what they're called, but Kyle, you know how people like have been smoking all their lives and they can't talk anymore and they have to like put that thing on
their throat. Yeah, they have those like weird robotic boxes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically the same thing as what this is.
Oh. Creepy.
Yeah. So those are two similar but not quite the same variations on this thing, and they're both considered forms of a talk box. So the Sonovox was actually shown a few years earlier than that Alvino Ray movie. This one was in an even earlier film, You'll Find Out, in 1940. Also, our listeners may recognize that exact same technique used as the voice of Casey Jr., the circus train in Dumbo.
Oh, yeah. That Dumbo, to this day, Dumbo is still like one of the creepiest Disney movies ever made to me. I forgot that even the train talks in Dumbo.
Yeah, I agree. But that's interesting that like it was invented in 39, and then only 2 years later they were already using it in the movie, like Dumbo, for example. So that's a very early use of a talk box in a non-musical sense. Really quickly, I'm just going to say like basically who over the course of time has used talk boxes. It's been embraced by like artists all over the map for decades since, you know, it came out. But some of the earlier adopters of this were rock bands, mostly, such as The Who, Steppenwolf, Iron Butterfly, as well as performers like Stevie Wonder, Elton John. Peter Frampton was a huge proponent of the talk box.
Yeah, that's what I was actually going to mention. I think that's who I saw use this device, because his album Frampton's Comes Alive, which was like one of the biggest albums of the 70s, like used this like a ton, like all over that album.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think exactly when he kind of stumbled upon it. I think he started using it in the early 70s, maybe, but he was aware of it since like the late 60s, I believe. But yeah, so he was one of the big names in talk boxes. We also recently mentioned the electro funk duo Zapp.
I love Zapp.
From the early 80s, and they use the talk box extensively as well.
Mm.
So, it's time for me to stop talking for a minute and you listeners can hear some clips. So the way I broke this down is that I wanted to choose basically the first time that this was used in music, and then a popular example of when it was used in music, and then a recent example of it being used in music. So the first clip is going to be the more or less the first time this was used in music, at least to a popular wide audience, which is from the film, you'll find out, in 1940. Remember how I said that it was used in that movie? So we're going to play a clip of a guy using it in that film.
That's really creepy.
A little bit.
It's creepy because it seems like such a modern sound, and yet it's being used here in the 40s.
Yeah, that kind of blows my mind how early that it is.
It's like if you took Daft Punk and transported them to the 40s, like that's what that would be.
Oh man, they need to do an album like that.
That would be really legit. I would not be surprised if they've used these kinds of devices in some of their albums, especially like the older ones from the 40s. That'd be so cool.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, I think the talk box is something that we generally associate with, like I said, rock music or even like electronic music, but I never really thought about it being as like a big band thing in the 40s. You know what I mean? So that's kind of a weird example to hear it in. So my second clip for this is, the song Forever by Pete Drake, moving up quite a bit to 1964. He was a country musician, and he was known for extensive use of the pedal steel guitar. I'm trying to think how to explain this. You know, in country music, how they have like, it's not a guitar. It's like a table almost with things on the top, and then they rub
things. I know what a steel guitar is, Peter. It's a slight guitar.
Sure. Yeah. I didn't know what it was called, but I know I've seen it
before. Yeah. Sorry. No, they use, just for a little bit more info.
Yeah.
Peter's right. It basically is a guitar with it's usually more than six strings laid out on a table, and they use a metal like tube that they put on their finger to slide around different notes. It sounds really cool.
That's how you kind of get that twangy sound in country music.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So he used that instrument a lot, and he also, this guy Pete Drake, also, I think he was basically one of the first people to really use this in popular music. The talk box in conjunction with the steel guitar.
Ooh.
So this is a clip from one of his songs called Forever.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's another example of, I wouldn't really think to use a talk box in a musical style like that. Kind of a slower country ballad almost, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's another kind of, so like that album that he made in 64, also called Forever. I believe that was kind of the first case where the talk box was kind of brought back into like the popular conscious, mm-hmm. more or less. Even though it kind of had started about two decades earlier. As for a recent example, actually, I think this is a really good example. The song 24K Magic by Bruno Mars that came out last year.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's a good song, and it's a very popular song, or at least it was when it first came out. And this also makes extensive use of the talk box. So it clearly the form or the instrument or whatever you want to call it, it's not dead by any means. So let's listen to a clip of that. Everywhere I go, they be like, I think when we hear the talk box used in cases like this, or really pretty much anything between the 80s and now, I think that's when people kind of associate it the most with that sort of music. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was just watching the video for the Bruno Mars 24K Magic. Mm. He basically has become Uptown Funk.
That is just his like, life.
The funk has entered his body and taken over his brain. And, you know, like there's a type of fungus that actually
fungus?
Takes over the brains of ants and spiders and stuff.
And, oh, I was just reading about that.
Yeah, it's this weird zombie fungus that takes over their brain and literally tells them, like, hey, crawl to, like, some high spot. And then the fungus literally grows throughout their body and, like, sprouts out of them. It's basically the basis for the game Last of Us.
Yeah,
The PS4 zombie game, because that was a spore-based zombie virus, which was really cool, by the way. Anyways.
Yeah.
I just imagine the funk has, like, entered Bruno Mars, and, like, in the next couple of years, we're just going to start to see, like, I don't know. Sorry. Just Bootsy Collins start to sprout out of his body.
Oh, my God. Jeez. Well, we'll be here to report it, I guess, when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Okay. Well, so that's a fairly good range of examples for the talk box. I probably could have put like a Peter Frampton example in there as well, but I feel like people can always listen to more stuff on their own if they want to. So moving on from the talk box, we also have the vocoder. And in terms of the sound of these two, I don't know if I could hear them. I don't know if I could necessarily pinpoint the difference in the final output, but basically the difference between these two is how that sound is made. So I already explained how the talk box works. The vocoder is a little bit different. It's a little bit more, I want to say it's more digital, but I think in its original forms, it was basically analog technically. So, but I kind of like to think of this as a kind of a more digital version of the talk box. Mm-hmm. So essentially you have, I think it's almost always a synthesizer, and the synthesizer has this microphone sticking out of it. And so when you speak or sing into the microphone, it collects the input from your voice, obviously. And that's called the modulator signal. Then the synthesizer, or I should say the vocoder, combines that voice signal with the musical output of the synthesizer itself. And the synth part is called the carrier signal. So basically when, I realize this makes no sense, but when you combine the frequencies of the voice and the music together, basically they come mesh together, and then the final output of that is basically a similar sound to what we just heard with the talk box. It's just done by combining the frequencies of those two inputs together and then outputting that, versus the instrument going into your mouth and then it coming out of your mouth, for lack of better phrasing.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different, but I feel like it kind of makes basically the same sound, if not something similar. I'm sure, you know, some audiophiles are going to be screaming at us saying, oh my gosh, they're so different. Fuck you. Whatever. So the vocoders were actually originally developed for telecommunications purposes in the 1930s. Again, like way earlier than I ever would have guessed. Essentially, I didn't understand all of it, but I think basically it was essentially as a form of compressing speech data for transmission for whatever reason, so it uses less bandwidth in some way or another. So I mean, it was always built for kind of the breaking down of vocal output, but it wasn't originally for music. So a couple decades later, you started to have people attempt to kind of develop vocoders specifically for music. The earliest one, it looks like, was 1956 and onward, with the Siemens synthesizer at the Siemens Studio for Electronic Music. S-I-E-M-E-N-S, Kyle. But of course, you know, in the years following, there were other prototypes built by other individuals throughout into the late 60s or so. In 1970, the electronic musician Wendy Carlos and electronic engineer Robert Moog, who is basically the godfather of the synthesizer and electronic music, if you didn't know. Together, they built their own vocoder, which I want to say became one of the more standard types as people started to use it for music. And this one was famously featured in the soundtrack to Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange the following year in 1971.
I love that movie, by the way.
So in terms of who used it, the vocoder, early adopters include Kraftwerk, Electric Light Orchestra, Giorgio Moroder, Phil Collins, Queen, Stevie Wonder again, Herbie Hancock, and many, many, many others. So what I've noticed is that the genre of people who use the vocoder tends to be more on the electronic side, whereas the genre of people using the talk box was more along the rock music side, and maybe a little bit of country.
I guess, I guess that makes sense because the talk box requires a guitar to work, basically.
Yeah, and the vocoder basically works off of a synthesizer. So, yeah. And, you know, you could also say, well, you know, rock music to some extent during, let's say, the 70s or so, kind of incorporated, or maybe in the 80s, I don't know the exact years, but they kind of started to incorporate, you know, some electronic-y bits, you know, in those early years.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some overlap, of course, and I'm willing to bet that some of these performers or groups used both types, you know. It wasn't always just one or the other, but I did kind of notice that trend about vocoders being more toward the electronic music side of things. All right, so let's listen to some clips. I mentioned A Clockwork Orange. The main, I guess, march song from that movie is based on Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, but it also features the first recorded song featuring a vocoder used for the singing. So why don't we listen to a clip of that?
That's creepy.
Yeah, kind of creepy.
I want some milk now.
Again, it's kind of... So this is a case where it's mixed with what is essentially classical music, but I feel like it works a little bit better than maybe some of the other examples we were listening to before. Or not even... Not better necessarily, but just sounds more natural, even though it still sounds a little creepy. There are, like I said, there are many, many songs that use the vocoder. One I noticed that that's a very widely popular song that uses a vocoder, but people don't necessarily really talk about it, is the Michael Jackson song PYT, Pretty Young Thing, from 1982.
Mm-hmm.
So they used a vocoder partly as like backing vocal effects for that song, but it's also prominently used like in the refrain of the song. So why don't we give our listeners a little taste of that?
I like this song. I forgot about this song.
And that's an example of a song where, like, obviously I've heard that song many times before, but I don't really think about that consciously, you know, about the vocoder being used in that. And also the fact that it wasn't a new thing by that point, but that was definitely one of the more prominent or, I guess, popular uses of it. So again, as with the talk box, I also wanted to find a fairly recent example of a popular song that used the vocoder. So Get Lucky by Daft Punk. A few years back, which was huge, and that makes pretty extensive use of the vocoder as well.
I'm kind of upset at you that this is the song you picked by Daft Punk.
Yeah, but I wanted to pick one that was pretty recent. So, but yes,
I
will say that they did use the vocoder quite a bit in their earlier stuff as well. So that's definitely not something that they were new to.
Speaking of Daft Punk, I saw a trailer for a movie that was supposed to come out. I think it was a French film, actually.
Hmm.
That was basically like a Daft Punk biopic, and it looked really interesting. And then I never heard about it again. I'm gonna look this up really quick while the listeners listen.
Well, Daft Punk, they're French, right?
That's why I think it was a French film.
Hmm.
Oh, did it come out? Yeah, it did. It's a film called Eden. It came out in 2015.
Oh. So we're only 2 years behind.
Okay, well, I have to find that movie now.
Yeah. And I do know that there were probably better Daft Punk songs I could have chosen, but...
As long as you admit that, Peter.
I do. That's fine.
Sorry, I'm like a huge Daft Punk fan. Don't get me wrong, I like Get Lucky, I like that album, but Get Lucky was like the very radio-friendly song.
Well, that's kind of why I chose it, though, as like a recent radio-friendly example, you know what I mean? Like, for our listeners who may not know, like, the whole catalog of Daft Punk.
Very true. Yeah, it's one of those songs that, like, everyone knows this song, so yeah. I get where you're coming from.
Okay, so that's the vocoder, essentially. So the third one I mentioned toward the beginning was Auto-Tune. And Auto-Tune is quite a bit different from the other two in multiple respects. For one, it's only been around since the late 90s, so only about 20 years. Wow, I feel old saying that. in comparison, you know, it wasn't in the 30s. So, I mean, that's a huge difference, about 60 mm-hmm. years or so. The other difference is that it's not really a hardware thing as much as it's a software thing. So this kind of answers a question you had earlier
mm-hmm.
about that. So essentially, it's a software processor that they originally developed to correct off-key inaccuracies. Like when they record someone singing, maybe they're off-key slightly at different parts. Mm-hmm. And auto-tune was basically a thing that let the recording studio people adjust, what do you call it? Like the tone or whatever.
The pitch.
The pitch of their singing to kind of make those corrections. But then what you had is you started to see people say, well, hey, what would happen if we cranked this to the max beyond what would be considered correction and into just like being really noticeable, you know, mm-hmm. as being more severely like raised or lowered in the pitch. And that's basically where auto-tune started. So this was developed in the late 90s. It was created by electrical engineer Andy Hildebrand, and it was originally released by Antares Audio Technologies in 97. The first song that really used this technique in the way that we understand auto-tuning was the song Fragments of Life by Roy Vedas in 1998. So that was the very first one, but 2 months later, Cher released the song Believe, which was a huge hit. And that one makes extensive use of auto-tune, and that's considered the first song that really brought auto-tuning into like the pop consciousness. Actually, let's change the order of things around a little bit. Let's actually play a clip of that right now since I'm talking about it. So sad that you're leaving. Takes time to believe it. But after all is said and done, you're gonna be the Lord. Do you believe in life after love? That's a song where like I feel like everybody knows that song and everyone's heard it 100 times.
I know that song. I totally forgot it was by Cher.
Well, I forgot it was by Cher, but I also never thought of that as being an auto-tune song.
Yeah, not, yeah, me neither. Not really.
But that's kind of the one that paved the way.
Inside myself, don't think you're strong enough, no. Do you believe in life after love?
You want me to do the rest of the episode and you can just say...
No, I was going to say you have to go back and use Premiere or whatever to auto-tune me singing it to make it sound better.
I'm not auto-tuning you, Kyle. Although, if you wanted to auto-tune yourself, you actually could with the IMT Pain auto-tuning app.
What?
That's a real thing. So, like I said, Cher was kind of the first person to use it popularly, but auto-tuning in the early 2000s, T-Pain kind of became the most widely known musician to use auto-tuning. To the point where he is basically synonymous with use of autotune. Apparently in 2008, he even demanded credit from other artists who tried to use autotune, which is stupid because it's not like you can copyright that or anything.
Only T-Pain.
Yeah. And so in 2009, T-Pain collaborated with app creator Smool, I guess they're called, to create the IMT Pain autotuning app. So that's been around for a few years, I guess. Other hip hop artists who have used auto-tune include Snoop Dogg, Lil Wayne, and Kanye West. So why don't we listen to an example of a T-Pain song with auto-tuning? Let's listen to I'm Sprung. So we went our separate ways. It's been a couple of days. But now I'm doing what I want to. But nobody telling me what I'm gonna do. And I'm feeling so free. But nobody but me. I know that auto-tune, I think we've probably even in the past have kind of talked shit about auto-tune, as have many other people. I know it's kind of been a very
controversial
topic, divisive kind of thing to use in music. I read that some popular musicians do use it like for its proper purpose to actually correct their pitch and whatever when they're recording so that the final mix of the song is actually a little bit more clean.
Mm-hmm.
But I also was reading that other artists like completely refused to use it at all. So, I mean, there's something to be said about that too, I guess. Not relying on software to correct your voice as a singer. Especially when a lot of people don't like auto-tune in its exaggerated state as well. So, yeah. I don't really know if the TalkBox or the vocoder really ever had much of a negative response. If anything, it was probably more along the lines of people kind of felt uncomfortable with it only because it sounded robotic-y and that was like a completely new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you go back to like the 40s, you know? You know, by the time you got to like, you know, the 70s or the 80s, I think it was a lot more accepted in popular music as a thing. But it could be that maybe earlier on it was a little bit more like, whoa, this sounds weird. Which might be why there's not a whole lot of examples before the 70s or the 60s. That's kind of a guess.
It may have been kind of jarring to people where they're like, this isn't music.
Yeah. So yeah, that basically comprises what I would consider to be like the three main pillars of voice synthesizers. Basically, I think I did a few hours of research for this, and I feel like anything that you hear that sounds like this kind of falls into one of these three categories.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we covered it fairly well. And I will say again that there's so much more detail for all of these that's ridiculous, but I obviously this episode is already long enough.
I'm curious as we use more and more digital technology to create music, and obviously with the constant growth of electronic music, if we're going to start seeing or developing other voice modulation programs. I mean, one could argue that you can do almost anything with someone's voice in like a lot of the audio editing programs nowadays. For example, I don't know if I would necessarily call it like a vocal synthesizer, but a trend I noticed in a lot of electronic music now is taking samples of singing and shifting the pitch really high so it sounds like chipmunks or whatever.
Oh.
I don't know if you know what I'm talking about at all.
Kind of. Do you have like an example you can...
Yeah, here, let me... This isn't the best example, but Mornin' by Star Slinger is one where they took a sample of music and kind of pitch shifted it, I guess. Like you and me. Another example that comes to mind is, hold on, Middle by DJ Snake. That's a really popular song right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon as well. And I guess that seems like... Now that you point that out, I know I've heard that in a number of different songs as well. I wonder if that's really considered a thing, like, or either a trend or a specific, if there's a name for that.
It's definitely a trend in electronic music. I don't think there's like a name for it right now. It's basically just pitch shifting.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, they've pitch shifted people up and down in music for a long time for a specific effect rather than just like, oh, we have to correct them.
Right.
They've been doing that since like the 90s. You know, even rappers, they shift their pitch lower to make them sound more gangsta, I guess. I don't know.
Mm. Actually, with that note, that kind of is an extension of what I was saying a little while ago, which was the talk box to me seems to be more like rock music. Vocoder is more like electronic music. And auto-tune, to complete the trio, it seems to be mostly for hip-hop music.
Mm-hmm.
Or for whatever reason. Not exclusively by any means in any of those, you know, three cases, but that kind of seems to be the genres that embrace those techniques the most.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so there you have it. I found that fairly interesting to do research on that, and it feels a little cool to know at least a little bit about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I've always kind of known what auto-tuning or what vocal modulation was. I just never knew, A, that there was so many different types of it, and B, I guess that it was so widely used among different genres. So now I can tell the difference between auto-tune, vocoder, and talkbox.
Yeah, and I also was just kind of blown away by the fact that they were all, or at least two of them were developed 80, 90 years ago, depending on whether I can do math. So, I mean, that's a long ass time ago, and I wouldn't have to guess that.
It's, I bet if you like really researched, I think a lot of musical technologies that we think are so like modern probably were developed a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't widely used yet.
Yeah. Well, I remember, this was probably a year ago now that we did. Remember that episode we did about those different like quirky music technologies that never really took off?
Yes.
The stuff that was invented in that topic was all like in the 20s and 30s, I feel like, as well.
Yeah.
So that seems to be kind of an era of exploring technology things, whether or not they, you know, made it through the years. These are examples mm-hmm. of things that actually did work out. I guess that closes out the topic for today. If you listeners enjoyed this, or if you learned something, tell us on Facebook at facebook.com/getyourfunk. Or if you want to check out some of the other topics that we've done, like the one I just mentioned about really old music tech that kind of failed. That was an interesting one. You can go to getyourfunk.com and browse our entire catalog of episodes, listen, download, search, whatever you want to do. All that fun stuff.
Collect them all.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. And we will be back with something else next time, as always.
Cool.
That's been your host, Kyle.
Yeah, I am Kyle. I'm Kyle, and I'm an alcoholic.
You're supposed to say, and that's your host, Peter, but that's fine.
And that's your alcoholic, Peter.
Hello. Bye.
Awkward goodbyes are the best goodbyes.